The following is a KTCK sports presentation.
Kick it. It's time for the Kick Around, the ticket style show about soccer and all that implies. 2 straight hours of HSOs in the Premier League, MLS, the national team, and Champions League. Soccer never stops, and neither do our hosts. Hoping for an off-season at some point, here are Andy Swift and Peter Welton on Sports Radio, 96.7 and 1310, The Tick.
Silva Pitti! De pierna izquierda viene Andrés Guardado, le pegó!
Hi-da-ho, B1s. Welcome to today's Kick Around. Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket, where you, the good B1, sits around, talks soccer and all that implies. Hi. For those new here, I'm Peter. How you doing? And with me is my soccer-talking BFF and the man that I cling to in my most dire moments of soccer vulnerability, Andy Swift.
Hey, Peter, will you please translate that opening call for me?
No, I was going to ask you. I am not bilingual.
Okay.
You, on the other hand, are a man of many languages. How many languages do you speak?
3.
English?
Yes.
Portuguese?
Yes.
And Spanish?
Español.
So what did that say?
Horvath saves it. No, he said Horvath is the hero, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I thought it was a good call from coming from the Spanish language broadcaster, right?
When I realized what Sam was playing, I was hopeful that we would get one of those old school Homer call of the week situations where everybody's super excited and then, oh, something really crummy just happened to our team. And
oh, and it started off in Spanish?
He saved it.
Yeah.
And okay, now we're still down 3-2.
No, man.
We will talk about the U.S. men's national team's big win over Mexico here in a little bit. In fact, we'll even talk a lot about the U.S. men's national team and what's getting ready to happen and the implications of such a big win over such a vaunted and historically deep trophy as the Nations League.
You're right. And all the hijinks surrounding it.
And the fact that it looks like it was 3D printed at a hobby shop.
True. It's a modern trophy, Peter.
Andy will dive into the Copa America.
Starts tomorrow night.
And we are ankle deep in Europa 2020, being played in June of 2021.
Yeah.
And today's show has taken a bit of an odd turn.
Yes.
Because a couple of hours ago, something occurred on my live television broadcast that I was not prepared for and didn't have. I thought Italy 3. Winning 3-0 over the Turks was a bit of a surprise. Even Wales getting a tie today was a bit of, I was not counting on a player almost dying on the field live on my television today.
Yeah, it was a surreal moment. I've never seen anything like that, obviously, watching live soccer. And it, like I was telling you off air, because things have turned for the better. The news coming out of Denmark is that, you know, he made it to the hospital. He's alive. But for a while, we were asking, is this going to be a lot worse than it turned out to be? And I thought, and what I was telling you was, I don't know how today's show would have been, because that would have been pretty impactful and emotionally impactful.
All right, so let's just set the table for anybody that's just tuned into The Ticket and is thinking, oh, what are they talking about? I have no idea. So the European Championships have started yesterday. The second day was this morning. Denmark is hosting Finland, and we're about 43 minutes into the game. And Denmark has a throw-in. Christian Eriksen, who is a top 25 player in the world, maybe?
Sure, right. One point,
arguably Denmark's
was.
Best player, formerly of Tottenham Hotspur, currently plays for Inter Milan. Mm-hmm. He's 29 years old, super fit guy. Just is casually kind of jogging back towards his teammate who's getting ready to throw the ball into him. When you can kind of see the look on his face where he gets kind of like, it almost looks like you think you look like when you get lightheaded, and then he face plants onto the pitch, the grass, and they have a shot of his face on the field, and it's not, I wouldn't say it's gruesome, it's not like he's twitching or anything like that, but his eyes are bugged out and he is completely still, and you can immediately tell something very bad has just happened.
So a teammate got to him and turned him around. That's how we were able to see his face. And the look on his eye, like his eyes were spread out, like he was out. He was gone.
Yeah.
And that's when his teammate, the urgency, like sometimes it's very telling to look at the players around a player to see how severe an injury is.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like everyone immediately signaled for the...
In fact, initially it was a Finnish player who was like, hey, I think you need to come over here because the teammate that threw the ball in kind of walked past Eriksson.
So it was a Finnish player that turned him over?
No, a Finnish player initially called, said, hey, you may want to bring somebody out here. It was a Danish teammate then turned him on his side. And so there's so much to this that I want to talk about because for the last 2 hours, soccer social media has been in this crazy state because there was a not insignificant amount of time where people like me and others were concerned we had just literally watched a guy die on live television.
And it makes you not want to talk about soccer anymore, and then you're just wanting your emotions are somewhere else, right?
Yeah. And there was some really amazing things that took place over the course of the next 15, 20 minutes, both from the standpoint of what do you do in this moment when you are the broadcaster responsible for putting this over the air, and there are lots of opinions about that, the reactions of his teammates, the fans, the paramedics, everything that was going on in this moment is, I just find fascinating in so many different angles.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is that by all accounts, he is awake and he is stable. We don't know specifically what happened. I think the most scary moment was when initially the trainers ran out on the field and were, you could tell, trying to make sure that he wasn't swallowing his tongue or anything like that. Then the paramedics came out, and when it got really weird on television is when they rolled him on his back and somebody straddled him and started doing chest compressions.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw that, as a child of somebody that worked in an ICU for literally almost 50 years, I knew it was way worse than just kind of the common thing that we see on the field.
Oh, yeah. When you get to like, that when point, you have people, to revive somebody.
Yeah. And that's, you don't start chest compressions unless something really bad is going on.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's when everybody globally just went, no, this is
his bad. Teammates formed a circle around the situation to shield everybody from being able to see it. But watching the reaction and how the players, his teammates, were reacting to what was going on behind them, because they were all facing out. Some of them were crying, some of them heads buried in their hands. And then they showed a family member. I don't know if it was
his
girlfriend,
wife. His wife.
So the other pretty scary moment was when I think it was Schmeichel that came over to talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got there, she starts bawling. We later found out that he came with good news. And so the bawling was like, oh, he's alive.
Right.
When you don't know what's going on, you know, part of you thinks, oh my gosh, he just got really bad news.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it turned out to...
So then there was a scene where the players, like you said, surrounded him. And then somebody from the Finnish side of the thing brought out these giant... They looked like giant Finnish blankets or something, because they had kind of that Finnish design around the edge to kind of cover up what was going on. And I was, you know, I was thinking to myself, it must be a good sign that they're carting him off. But it turns out that maybe, in fact, we didn't know, right? Like, typically, if you're giving somebody chest compressions and their heart has stopped, and it would be a good sign that they were carting him off. But in post-COVID, that's not necessarily the case. That because of the protocols and the processes of how you treat people in a post-COVID world, you can't give mouth-to-mouth anymore, by the way. Or you can, but you just don't do that.
Mm.
That maybe the fact they had put him on a cart could mean that they just needed to get him to a hospital as soon as possible.
Mm.
So, again, there were some photos that came out about 30 minutes after the fact that you could see him kind of awake and raising his hand in between the blankets that were trying to cover him up and things like that.
That was the other scary moment, though, is when they did bring the blankets and when they carted him off, they were shielding him with the blankets. So it's like, wow, we've never seen that before. Yeah. You know, are they trying to hide somebody that's passed away?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was thinking, typically you don't put the blankets up until either A, there's something like a exposed bone or open wound, or B, he's literally dead on the cart. And
it was... That was tough to watch.
And then, you know, you just felt terrible for the guys that are having to call the game, Derek Ray and his cohort, who are just like, I don't know. I mean, I thought Derek did a fantastic job.
They did a great job under the circumstances. I was a little bit surprised they left it with the announcers as long as they did. And there's conflicting opinions whether they should have stayed with the footage from the stadium, but at least toss it back, I think, to the studio guys.
I wondered if maybe the studio guys weren't ready or available.
It was 2 minutes before halftime. They were all on set, in place, and mic'd.
Yeah, the other thing everybody should know, because there's been a ton of criticism on ESPN for showing what they showed, is that the production of this event is being done by one entity, which is UEFA, and then everybody else globally picks that up and then does their own production on top of it. So while, yes, ESPN could have cut away and gone to studio, for those that are upset, for example, that whoever was making these choices shot the camera and showed Erickson's wife in a state of distress, that wasn't ESPN's decision. And ESPN had no idea they were going to do that. So there's a whole lot to this story. It's easy to have knee-jerk reactions about it. We still don't know. You know, I've seen people upset that they should have even restarted the tournament, much less restarted this game a few hours later.
Well, had he ended up in a much worse place, that conversation is definitely valid. The fact that he's okay, not okay, he's in stable condition in the hospital, he survived, you know, I think you can continue with the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I probably disagree that this game should have been played or restarted today.
Mm-hmm.
I think tomorrow would have been a good time to restart the game. But maybe, like you said off air when we were talking about it, maybe both teams got together and all players agreed and the management of the teams agreed that to go forward with it.
I would like to believe that it was left up to the teammates, the Danish, specifically the Danish teammates, mm-hmm. that it wasn't even a choice of the Finnish players,
correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I would love to believe that they said, look, it's up to you guys. Do you want to play today? If not, you may have to play tomorrow, which may change how the rest of the tournament goes for you. And they chose to restart today. The other game, Russia and Belgium did start on time, and everything else seems to be going okay. We'll keep everybody posted as much as we can. But I do want to play one piece of audio, which I just thought was pretty farting amazing. So remember, this is the Danes versus the Finns being played in Copenhagen. This is a pretty good rivalry. But as all of this was going on kind of in the aftermath, there are both Danish and Finnish fans. What you're about to hear are the Finnish fans chanting Christian's first name and the Danish fans chanting his last name in unison. So I think that's a beautiful moment of fans from all over the world really just kind of coming together in a moment I don't think most of us have ever seen. I mean, I know there have been other really frightening health incidences in sport across, you know, the Dallas Stars had one, Hank Gathers is one. This is a pretty, what turned out not to be a tragedy, but was no less awful to watch. I thought that was at least one very heartwarming moment that we got to witness in the aftermath of all of that. All right. So as far as we know, Christian Eriksen is going to be okay. We'll keep you posted as we learn more. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Euros here on the Kick Around. Welcome back to the Kick Around. I'm Peter. He's Andy. The Euros have started. Now, Copa America kicks off tomorrow? It's tomorrow night, not tonight. And we'll talk about that, the U.S. men's national team here in a little bit. So the European Championships did kick off yesterday with Italy facing off against the Turks.
Mm-hmm.
And I had predicted a 1-0. Well, let me also share this little tidbit mm-hmm. with you, Andy. I don't think this will come as a surprise to you.
No.
You already know what I'm going to tell you?
Yes, because you told me already, but for the audience.
Man, you have no
just do it.
Radio,
no.
Like, theater of the mind sense.
Go.
We need to work with him on
no,
this.
No, I like to react
I'm willing to hold classes.
Organically. Tell me.
I went through
mm-hmm.
and predicted. I actually went into the UEFA bracket system and predicted all of the outcomes. All right. And I posted those on my Twitter account. Mm-hmm. But what you may not have known is that I also predicted the actual scores of every group game so far. And to date, I'm 0-3.
Wait, hold on. A few things here. First, that's very 16-year-old Andy. I used to do that back in my teens.
Now I'm being judged.
Yeah. So, two.
I would have done it when I was a 16-year-old.
Two. So, it's good that it's on record, and we shall follow it as the tournament progresses, and that's very brave of you to predict even the scores. When you say you're 0-3... That includes score specific.
No, so if you're just going by result,
yeah.
I am 1-1-1. So
okay.
I predicted Italy would win.
Sure.
I got that right, but I got the score wrong.
Right. You predicted
1-0. I predicted Wales would win.
You did.
I did. I thought that would be an upset win today. I thought the Welsh.
Call of you.
I'm wearing a Welsh jersey,
yeah,
by the way. I said they would win 2-1. They tied 1-1.
Yeah, okay.
And I also said Denmark and Finland would tie 2-2. Why I thought there'd ever be, like, minus the whole medical incident, even before that, why I thought four goals would be scored between Denmark and Finland
Timo
is stupid.
Timo Pukki got in your head.
You
didn't thought,
the medical incident?
He did score 10 goals in the qualifiers leading up to that. I mean, the guy's insane.
Yeah.
Italy, real quick. 1-0 was your prediction, which is a solid prediction, Peter. I would have really backed you up on that one. And did you know, by the way,
for Italy, Turkey?
Yes.
Yes.
That Italy, this was the first time, you know this probably already, you've heard it. This is the first time in Euro history. Now, this is a four-time World Cup champion, five times top four finisher in the Euros.
Mm-hmm.
First time they score three goals in a game in the Euros.
Yeah, I did know this.
It's crazy.
And right. Now, and this is what's really weird, is that going into this tournament, you know, the Italians had some questions about who was going to score goals, and if the Turks were good at anything, it was defending. So to see
it set
Italy
up a perfect 1-0, right?
Lay three on Turkey was a bit of a surprise.
And also the start of tournaments. The first games played in tournaments are typically 1-0 ho-hum events. Now, Italy, we know why they've never scored three goals in a Euro and still have had a lot of success historically is because they're the kings of the 1-0 wins, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a different Italy team, though, and Lars gave us heads up on this in last week's show. His very fine review of the Euros. He told us this is a different Italy team. This is a team that plays open and plays with creativity, and they like to go forward. And bam, lo and behold, he was right. 3-0.
Side note, hey Josh, if you can quickly find some Turkish cliche music, I'll buy you lunch next week.
Was that it? Italian cliche music?
I thought Italy. I said this somewhere else. Italy out-soccered Turkey 100% in this game.
Yeah.
Every aspect of the game Italy owned, and Turkey just couldn't get their foot on the ball. Italy was spraying the ball wide. They were coming through the middle. Their fullbacks were bombing forward. Everything went to plan for Italy, and it will be interesting to see just how much of a contender they end up being.
Italy? Italy?
Yeah.
I think a pretty solid bet to go far.
I don't think...
Looking at your predictions now, where did you have them going?
I have to go back and look on another device because I had that...
You make it very complicated.
Well,
I
forgot to print out the actual bracket, which was a stupid...
I had Italy going pretty far. Just because they have a little bit of an easier bracket to deal with.
Lunch is on me next week,
yes.
Josh. Absolutely. Lunch is on me. So I had, I had Italy, where did I have them in here? I had them beating the Netherlands in the first round, and I have them losing to Belgium in the quarterfinals.
And I had them advancing to the semis.
Okay.
I think the upper bracket is easier than the lower bracket. But
yeah. So that was a very impressive run. Italy looks like they will make quick business of everybody else in their group.
Now, in the same group, those are your boys, right? Wales and Switzerland are in that same group A. Those are the guys that played this morning.
Correct. And I had this group finishing Italy, Turkey, Wales, Switzerland. And
are you going to be wrong?
Maybe.
I had the group Italy, Switzerland, Wales, Turkey.
So you had the Turks coming last.
I did, and I had Switzerland ahead of Wales, and I'm still confident of that pick after what I saw today. What about you? Do you feel Wales showed you anything that gives you hope that they will advance?
I think the Welsh are look, the Welsh gave up a goal in the one thing that they are probably one of the best in the tournament at, which is set piece defending. I don't think they'd given up a set piece goal through the entirety of qualifying. Mm-hmm. I think they made a mistake of putting a 5'8 guy and a 6'1 guy on a corner kick. And, you know, up until I'd say into the opening minutes of the second half, all of the dangerous moments in that game were Wales' dangerous moments.
Yeah, the Swiss dangerous moments, quote dangerous moments, were controlled dangerous moments for the Welsh defense.
Yeah, the Swiss was really just about passing the ball back and forth, left and right. They didn't really they just played low. Welsh played low block and looked to counter.
Yeah, I disagree that the Swiss didn't come close to. I mean, they had a couple of really good opportunities. They just didn't execute properly. I just wonder why Wales, because once Wales got scored on and they decided to take the game to Switzerland and go on offense, basically, and not do the low block, they looked really good, actually.
But see, that's the classic problem, which is teams that actually can probably attack better than they give themselves credit for count on their opponent now falling back into their own more defensive posture. So if Wales chooses to play the more attacking style, then suddenly the Swiss probably amplify their ability to counterattack, especially with somebody like Mbolo, who's way faster than anybody on the back line of Wales. So I can kind of see the thinking there.
Yeah, you don't want to be wailed on if you're Wales by going on offense, right?
You get it. You lose a point for that, sir.
Right. I mean, you're saying you don't want to be done to you like you do to others.
Right. And then, you know, up until the very frightening moments of Denmark-Finland, that was not a dissimilar-looking game to what we were watching with Wales and Switzerland.
Yeah, which was Switzerland playing, or Denmark playing the part of Switzerland. Right?
Yeah, and Finland just kind of sitting back. Now, I have to state, right up front, I was crushed to see that Finland was not wearing their very sweet home shirts, the white with the blue Finnish cross on it.
Because they weren't the home team.
They were wearing their let's go to team dinner shirt, which is their blue away thing that they were wearing.
So,
I didn't like that.
So. I didn't think that game was as entertaining as this. I thought the Switzerland-Wales game was actually a decent game, especially in the second half. I thought it was a fairly entertaining game. But Switzerland-Finland started off ho-hum, I think. And Denmark-Finland started off a little bit slow. Finland didn't really look that good.
Well, the Finns probably aren't man-to-man a very good team. They've got a couple of MLS players in there, but they are noted for being a really good team concept.
Iceland. Like Iceland.
Like an Iceland, yes, or a Leeds, yes.
This is their first ever major tournament.
Yeah.
World Cup, Euros, whatever it is, first time ever.
And they got a win today because what we don't know is how it was decided to restart the game after the Christian Eriksen incident. They did restart the game. It has now been completed. Finland ended up winning the game 1-0 on a header that Schmeichel looks like should have had easily, but it spills off of him into the goal. You instantly said that's a mental error.
He was one of the closest players to Eriksen.
Yeah. So again, we don't know how they chose. We don't know if this was the Danish player's decision, if it was UEFA's mandate. Mm-hmm. We don't know yet. But the fact that Denmark did lose to Finland today is no matter how you slice it, an upset.
Yeah, and it throws the group in a little bit in the disarray of the group. My prediction for the group, because I thought with Denmark hosting three games, you know, all three games were going to be played in Denmark in this group, I thought they had a good chance to sneak by as a dark horse first place with Belgium getting off to a slower start without De Bruyne to start off the tournament. They'll get him later. And I thought this was a good chance for Denmark to finish first in the group. Obviously, that's all for naught now.
Yeah. So, by the way, Belgium's already romping on Russia 2-0. And I will say, as much as I'm not a Russia fan, in fact, one of my favorite side stories of the tournament is the Ukrainian home jersey that has the outline of their nation on the front that includes Crimea, that has the Russians all up in arms. That makes me giggle. I have to say, the circumstance around the first Belgian goal drives me nuts. So a ball is played into the box. Lukaku is clearly offside, but a Russian defender tries to clear it and flubs it, and then it kind of falls to Lukaku, who now is in an advantageous position and knocks it in for a goal. And I think that should be – I know how the rule is written, but I think that is a crummy application of the offside law.
The old rule, the initial pass, Lukaku's offside, the ball is going to him, so they would call it offside. Once the defender touches it, with the new rule, it's a new snapshot. And then when the ball goes from him to Lukaku, he's no longer offside. And that's the new rule.
But my counterpoint is, so the only other option for that defender is to just let the ball go through, which could then unleash a guy who is onside, run in and knock it in. So
how about play it right and clear it?
Yeah, but I know.
It's the spirit of the law and the game. That's anti the spirit of the game. We should say Lukaku is teammates with Eriksen at Inter Milan.
Yeah.
And we were worried about Lukaku's reaction to all this, especially if Eriksen would have been in worse shape. But clearly Lukaku there scored a goal and went to the camera and kind of had a salute.
Now, Andy, before we go to break, I published all of my predictions, both groups and bracket, on the interweb for the public to
very
see
good.
As
That's
record.
Very brave of you.
Did you? Do you? Or did you?
No, but I can give you whatever you want to know.
Oh, okay.
It's all, I have it all.
Okay.
Awesome. But now we know what's happened, though, so I can change things up.
We do have more games coming up. The big one, obviously, tomorrow is England and Croatia. We get to see Austria and North Macedonia, and the other one would be the Netherlands and Ukraine. The England-Croatia one is the rematch of the semifinal of the World
What do you
World
have
Cup.
For that score?
I have that as a 2-2 tie.
That's way too high scoring, I think. But you know what? That could happen, maybe. Yep.
Yep.
And what
I
do you think?
I have Austria beating North Macedonia 2-0, and I have the Netherlands and Ukraine at hockey sticks.
Okay, yeah. Those aren't bad predictions. I'm just interested in hearing your in-depth analysis of Austria against Northern Macedonia.
I'll probably speak mostly about the North Macedonia jersey.
Okay, yes.
Which is an interesting story.
Goes back to kid. You like people. Some people pick horses by the color of the horse or the jockey jersey. You're picking teams in the Euros based on their kit.
There is a little bit of kit preference in the recipe of how I made my picks. I cannot deny that. All right, when we come back, what?
No, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. All right, when we come back, Andy will break down and talk about the other big tournament that starts tomorrow, the Copa, next here on the Kick Around.
Gobble, gobble.
By the way, everybody, happy Record Store Day.
Yay.
Save your record store, Peter.
Man, I don't think they need saving anymore.
No, not today they don't.
If you've been to a record store of late, that may be one of the retail outlets that don't need saving. They're doing quite well.
Just raking money these days. Good.
Making big bucks off of historically been very inexpensive things they've paid for.
So we saved the record store then.
We have done it. We may have saved the record
murdered
store.
Murdered CDs to save records, and I'm for it.
All right, so just for anybody tuning in, this is the soccer show of record, and the good news is that Christian Eriksen of Denmark appears to be okay. He is in a hospital, tests are being run, a cardiac attack, what do they call that?
Cardiac arrest.
A cardiac arrest, thank you. Not a heart attack, because those are two very different things, or not very, they are two different things. Now, there's lots of speculation over how it occurred or what the situation is. We'll find out more here in due time, but the good news is that he was good enough. They chose to continue with the game, and his DJ reported the Finns kind of surprisingly, or maybe after all of this, not surprisingly, ended up winning the game 1-0 over the Danes.
By the way, it was both teams, players from both teams, requested to go ahead and finish the game today.
Yes.
So,
yesterday, our friend, the Kick Around's own Buzz Carrick, tweeted a poll asking people if they preferred national teams or club teams.
Like, what do you mean?
If you have a preference... Mm-hmm. Do you prefer your national team or do you prefer your club? Like, which is
club
your
or country?
Club or country? Yes.
And but in what context, though? That's kind of a just.
If you had to pick one, if I'm holding a gun to your head and
like
said,
who I'd rather watch more? What competition gets me more excited?
Yeah. What do you care more about?
I would say national team. For
me. In that particular poll, the national team won. Yeah. And I do think it's an interesting question, which is do people get more excited about national team tournament events or do they get more excited about their club team's league season, right? And I think it's always a function of timing and it may also be a function of how good your club team is.
Yeah. So or your country's team.
Right. So if you were to ask this question in Seattle, maybe you'd get a very different answer than you do here in Dallas.
Yep.
By the way, I don't know if you noticed this, and we'll talk about U.S.-Mexico later on. Did you see that Dallas was the third largest watching viewership of U.S.-Mexico on Univision?
On Univision, I did. And I have some Univision or television broadcast numbers I want to throw by you and talk about.
The reason why I'm saying all this is because this is the moment where soccer fans are blessed with not one international tournament in the Euros, but two. The Copa America kicks off tomorrow night. And Andy, would you please guide us through all things South America?
Well, you know what's interesting is that the Copa America used to be played in odd years and in 2018 so that it didn't compete actually with the Euros. So it would be played like the last Copa America was played in 2019. The Euros are played on even numbered years, not World Cup years, right? But in 2018, CONMEBOL voted, that's the South American Confederation, voted to move the Copa America to coincide with and fall in line with the Euros to be more in line with FIFA qualification for World Cups, blah, blah, blah. So, but it turns out both tournaments, the 2020 Euros and the 2020 Copa America, had to be moved because of COVID to this year. So that's why both are being played at the same time. They would have been played the same year last year had that had COVID not happened. So,
fun fact.
Yes, fun fact. There are many fun facts related to Copa America, but one of them, did you know that this Copa America was also going to be played in multiple countries, in two countries? It was going to be played in Colombia.
Oh, yes,
and
I did.
In Argentina.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have been a first also, just like the Euros are being played in multiple countries, but they decided that they would move all the games to Argentina very recently because of the civil unrest in Colombia due to political protests.
Colombia sounds like a very scary place.
So Leonel Alvarez lives in Colombia, so he could always come out and look out after you if you want.
Leonel's kind of a scary guy.
He is a very intimidating
guy. When I think
guy.
Scary Colombia living, yeah. I think of Leonel Alvarez.
You know, he won Survivor Colombia after his professional playing days.
Did he really?
Before he took on the national team coaching duties.
That totally makes sense.
That dude is, anyway. So they moved the tournament entirely to be played in Argentina, but
The
COVID issue got worse in Argentina, and the government actually increased the protocols required for COVID. And basically, the government said, if you're going to play Copa America here, you need to follow these very strict protocols that they gave CONMEBOL. And CONMEBOL said, there's no way we can adhere to these with things being so last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just, the president of CONMEBOL, as things work sometimes, just picked up the phone and called the president of Brazil and said, hey, can we come play Copa America in Brazil? Where the COVID situation is worse than in Argentina. But the president of Brazil said, yes, we would love to host Copa America. Please come and have Copa America and play Copa America in Brazil without checking. He didn't check with his health authorities. He didn't check with the mayors of the cities where they're going to play these things. So CONMEBOL announces that the Copa America is now moving to Brazil and will be played in Brazil. And meanwhile, all the different governing bodies within Brazil are saying, what? No, you can't. We have a raging pandemic in Brazil. You can't play Copa America here. The president put down his foot. The Brazilian national team was going to protest, and they were going to pull out of the tournament. Uruguay said, we are pulling out as well. Then Messi and Argentina said, we are not. And so with that, because they couldn't get all the national teams aligned, Brazil and Uruguay, they stood down, the national teams.
Okay, this is where I got lost in the debate because, you know, I saw Casemiro giving a really surprisingly eloquent
the captain of Brazil.
The captain of Brazil, who also plays for Real Madrid, giving a really eloquent kind of speech as to why he didn't think they should be doing this.
Because the numbers are out of control in Brazil.
It's nuts. It's crazy.
Right.
And then, you know, I saw the Uruguayans were saying, okay, we back you up.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So Messi singularly changed
Messi
everybody's
and
mind?
And the Argentinians. Brazil and Uruguay, Brazil, first, they were hoping the other teams would fall in line and say, yes, we are also going to boycott unless we postpone it to a different date or play it somewhere else. They wanted to come play in the U.S., and the U.S. was ready to host it. They needed a little bit more time to get everything in place.
They couldn't screw it all together.
Yes. So because of TV and all that, though, the CONMEBOL wanted to have it immediately or have it when it was a program to be had. So once Uruguay came on board, Brazil was actually ready then to announce it after their game on Tuesday.
That they were out.
The Brazilian players were going to have a press conference, but none of the other countries followed suit. And so with that, they felt, okay, you know, let's...
And they're going to play this in empty stadiums.
Yeah, empty stadiums, full-on protocol, COVID protocols in place.
Masks. They're going to play in masks,
right?
They're going
to play in masks, right?
Those shields that old ladies wear
so
at the mall.
All staff and referees will
have to be
vaccinated. Players, they're not disclosing who's vaccinated and who's not, but they're going to play in empty stadiums. Part of the fun of Copa America, you've watched Copa America.
The atmosphere.
It's the atmosphere. So we're going to lose a little bit of that.
That crazy Colombian chicken guy.
Yeah, right, in the stands.
In the stands,
yeah. He's there every World Cup they attend, too.
And the Brazilian guy with the hat that the ball goes around on.
So a little bit of a format change for this one. Typically, Copa America, because South America has 10 countries, they invite two. The U.S. has sometimes been invited to compete in Copa America. And so the number of teams that typically play in a Copa America is 12, so that they can have three groups of four. But because of the COVID, they didn't invite two countries this year. The two countries they invited couldn't make it, Australia and Qatar. So they're only going to play with 10, and they're going to divide them into two groups of five. The northern South American countries are going to be in one group, and then the southern South American countries are going to be in another group.
I'm looking at these two groups, and I feel like somebody got a way big advantage over the other.
So Brazil with the northern countries is in the weaker group than the southern group, which is Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay.
And Bolivia.
And the other crazy thing about this particular Copa America is that group stage, you play four games.
Okay.
Because there are five teams in your group.
Yes,
so you
yes.
play four as opposed to three. And then four of the five teams advance to the quarters. So really all this is to eliminate two teams and, of course, to get that TV revenue. So who's the favorite? It's Brazil. Brazil's won all six qualifiers they've played so far for the World Cup, six out of six. They're rolling. They have the most depth.
Chile.
They have the least amount of issues within the team. They have harmony within the team. The players like the coach. Things are all looking okay for Brazil, and now it's being played in Brazil. I think Brazil has to be the big favorite.
And doesn't Chile have a COVID issue?
Vidal.
Oh, okay. He wasn't with the team when he was.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. No, he was out partying with his friends. Less than 2 weeks after getting the vaccine and got COVID, so he didn't travel.
And doesn't he have like some sort of really significant other symptom or
he had
condition?
He had hearts. I don't know. I thought he had strong symptoms, but I don't think it got worse.
Oh, I thought I had read that he had ended up with on a ventilator or something.
No, he even went to the game.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Mohawk
saved him.
Yeah, right, exactly. So Argentina, obviously the favorite to win the other group, Group B, but Messi right now, in six World Cup qualifiers so far, no goals from the field. Two PK goals, no goals from the field. So Argentina is the usual mess they are in recent times with Messi playing with the 10 jersey. You know that Argentina hasn't won Copa America since 1993, and that was the last major tournament they've won as a national team, as a senior national team.
Yeah,
the Messi era just hasn't produced trophies. So that is, you know, that's working against them. If I had to pick a dark horse, I'd pick Uruguay. They're always... sneaky good, right? Mm-hmm. We've learned to not.
Is Cavani on the team still?
Cavani's on the team, but he didn't. He hasn't been playing the qualifiers, but he is on the team. So
he's very handsome, that Cavani.
First game is tomorrow at 4:00. Everything kicks off.
How do you watch this?
Brazil. It's on Fox Sports, and it's also on Univision. TUDN.
I think I read somewhere they're going to actually show some of the games on Big Boy Broadcast Fox 4.
They are. Yeah,
okay.
And FS1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a nightly FS1 show that they're doing nightly, and then obviously the Univision or whoever else will have one.
But I do recommend, catch some Copa America.
Absolutely.
You've seen it is actually very good, high-quality soccer. After, you know, after Brazil and Argentina, that third team to that seventh team, it's all very tight.
Yeah, I got to ask you this question.
Chile, Colombia, Paraguay.
I got to ask you this. When we were texting back and forth about this morning, you seemed surprised that I would want to talk about the Copa America.
Yeah, well, you know, you kind of like, I don't know.
I like soccer.
Yeah, I guess you do a little bit. You're kind of a soccer nerd. Have you predicted the Copa America scores and who's going to win group?
Yeah, I don't feel like I have that level of knowledge.
So who's won two of the last three Copa Americas?
Two of the last three.
Yeah, trivia question.
I'm going to say two of the last three is Chile.
Right, and who's won five of the last nine? Brazil.
Brazil.
Yeah, and Argentina, not since 1993. That's all you need to know.
That's all I need to know.
No, I'm just kidding.
And I have not done, unlike I did on Twitter for the Europa tournament, or European tournament, I have not done a Copa America jersey review, kit review.
There is a, I think The Athletic has a review of the Copa America kits. Right. You need to go and check that out.
I'll have to go check that one out. All right. Since you spoke of the Messi situation, my concern of how Pulisic would end up being the American Messi turned out to be utter trash, and we'll talk about the U.S. men's national team next here on The Kick Around. Ride it, man. You hit a home run with that one. Josh, kudos. You get to play the turkey sound effect from here on out. It's the official sound effect of the Turkish national team now.
You know that we have.
I'm sure we're going to get canceled for that, aren't we? We're going to get in trouble.
Turkish P1s are probably not happy.
Well,
yeah, exactly. Sam.
You're the producer, sir. You're the one in control of everything that goes over the air.
I never told her to do that.
I think Josh. I think Josh and Peter, Sam, are the ones.
Yeah,
that would.
Yeah,
we're good. We're good, man.
Andy Swift and me
yeah,
in
we're
about
good.
3 weeks.
Yeah,
I blame DJ.
Now we're thinking on our feet.
Leave me out of this.
All right. Well, hey, welcome back to The Kick Around. For those tuning in to find out what was going on this morning, yes, a player for the Danish national team went down in a medical incident that turns out to have been a some sort of heart issue. He is in the hospital. He's going to be fine. That game was later restarted and finished, and things are back to normal in terms of at least the tournament. So that's the most that we know. We don't know what caused it or anything like that, but Christian Eriksen appears to at least be alive. Mm-hmm. And based on how concerned we all were several hours ago, that's probably all that matters, right?
Mm-hmm.
For sure. All right. So it's funny that this actually has taken an hour for us to get to, because something happened on Sunday that was so amazing. And in many ways, the culmination of many things that we've been waiting for as a nation for the U.S. men's national team, which was to lift a trophy. Now, all of this seems very weird when we're talking about this tournament that didn't exist a few years ago and this wonky-looking trophy that looks like it was 3D printed and there's no tradition and no history behind it.
Yeah, so what...
The Nations League, just, you know, CONCACAF started a Nations League tournament just like UEFA did in a term, you know, to try to help other teams get opportunities
more games and
stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it ended up culminating... the tournament was stopped in 2019. That was the last time they played it. They picked it back up again here a couple of weeks ago. The U.S. had to endure Honduras and beat them out in a last-minute goal, which meant they had to face Mexico. Mm-hmm. And the game was played in Denver on Sunday night. And I really didn't know what to expect. And I went into the game saying, my expectations are low. I just want to see progress.
Yeah. So before we talk specifically about the game, your thought going in about them potentially winning this and raising the trophy and what to you it was a big deal, you know, as a U.S. national team fan. But, you know, the U.S. has won the Gold Cup.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So those were also special. I think, but what I'm trying to get to is I think because the team then was eliminated in World Cup qualifying and there was such a downtime and a bummer about that, and this is the young team and this is the future, I think it kind of makes you look at things a little differently and appreciate these victories a little bit more.
Yes, and it also has a lot to do with Greg Berhalter, the changes within the federation itself, the new, as you said, the new generation of players. It feels like this entire thing has gone through yet another reset.
Yeah.
And we didn't know how this reset was going to go, and by and large, everybody was very concerned that this reset was not done properly.
Yeah.
How he got his job and all those things, right? But it was all set along the contrast of we have the most experienced and most highly skilled players this nation has ever had in mass numbers.
Yeah. And we've seen them play in exhibition matches and friendlies where they've looked decent, where they've shown creativity and the combination of creativity and grit that we haven't seen in the national team or for a long time.
And then they look like crap during versus Honduras.
But now they're finally going to play in a tournament and games that matter. And so this is why the expectation for this was high. And then, yes, then they played Honduras, and we went.
It was very CONCACAF-y, right? You know, it's just it. And then, so to play Mexico, and we said this, it was very likely that the United States somehow would look better versus Mexico than they did against Honduras. And there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. And sure, they did.
Yeah.
Now, Berhalter did a very weird thing. He changed the formation. He went with three center backs, and he did all kinds of weird stuff that I thought was not helping the team very much. I thought the formation and the tactics that he laid out that night early in the game caused his two best players to disappear from the game, Sergiño Dest and Christian Pulisic.
Mm-hmm.
Why they chose to play that formation is still a bit of a mystery to me. The 3-4-3, or however you want to describe it. It was a weird decision. Ultimately, it paid off because they ended up winning the game. But I'm not 100% sure they won the game based on the formation.
No, because Berhalter had to fix things. Mm-hmm. He had to fix things with substitutions. And credit to Berhalter for adjusting on the fly and getting things a little bit better from where they started, because they were scored on in the first minute. Now, one thing about Berhalter, one thing that he does with the national team, and I don't know if I'm a big fan of this, is that he will adjust formations and tactics and styles based on who they're playing, as opposed to just saying, this is us, this is what we do, and we're going to go do it well, and you guys bring your best against us, and let's go at it.
The biggest reason for me to criticize that as a decision is that I think it makes it difficult for players who come into these tournaments to know what the expectation of the coach is, what their roles are, how they're supposed to go about it. I think the national teams that do the best historically are ones that have a set formation or a set plan and just stick to it.
Yes.
Game after game.
That's my point. Yeah.
No, I'm agreeing with you. And that's what bothers me about Berhalter, is that he feels there's some sort of advantage to being tactically flexible.
Mm-hmm. He wants to outthink and outsmart the other coach.
I think that when you see Sergiño Dest kind of like just aimlessly wandering into dead space and not coming back and defending in large swaths of that game, I think that is evidence of the problems of just kind of making up formations on the fly.
Yeah, and that was two games now that we saw Dest a little bit, not lost, but not bringing the game that we expect somebody that plays for Barcelona to bring to the national team, right? And Dest is used to playing outside back in a four-man back line and as a wing back in a, I guess it was a 3-4-3, as a not even a wing back. Do you call that a wing back or outside midfielder?
Well,
I don't know what you call that.
You know, in Berhalter's post-game or the next day, he was, you know, there's been lots of talk about how tactically what they were doing was playing a 3-4-3 that kind of morphed into a 4-4-2 as they got the ball. And so he was going from being a wing back to a full-on left midfielder to a winger, you know, depending. It's here's the problem. It's far too complicated.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Like, I know all these guys are multimillionaires and the highest level players, but at the national team level, I think you got to keep it simple.
Yeah. And it also left Ream exposed a little bit, who was the, you know, I think you and I disagree a little bit on how good Ream was on that night, but I think it probably caused problems for Ream as the one of the three on the side that Dest was playing on. Now, before the game was played, when we were talking about the game during the show the day before, you said the one thing to worry about with Mexico was obviously the high press with Martino, and the way that Mexico presses high against the U.S. national team, particularly because they struggle playing out of the back, and Berhalter insists that we're going to play this way. And sure enough, minute one, not even minute one, this is how Mexico scores.
Yes. The entire sequence starts at midfield when Kellen Acosta loses a ball. Mexico then takes the ball in, and then there is a subsequent series of errors on the United States part that culminates with Mark McKenzie trying to pass the ball out, and I can't remember the Mexican player's name, who so smartly...
Corona.
Was it Corona?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just a wonderful angle of attack, sniffs it out, steals the ball, and roofs it, right? And then we're in minute two, and America's down, and we're thinking, okay, this is not going to be a good
evening.
Yeah,
it's going to go all down south fast.
But to be fair, they kind of settled things out and kind of found their feet.
It took a while. Not immediately after the goal. Yeah,
no, yeah.
About 20 minutes.
And there was a critical moment in the game where Mexico scores, and it goes 2-0, and it looks like it's over. But because of VAR, He's offside. The United States goes turns right around, ties the game, makes it 1-1, and within the span of 2 minutes, you have two very different games that have taken place. You go from being down two to tied at 1-1, and now game on.
Yeah, and the U.S. found the game at that point. Their confidence, the confidence that we had seen in those friendlies from this young team, we started to see it. Swagger is a word I use a lot with this team, but it's true. You see swagger that you sometimes saw with past national team players, but individual players here, Dempsey had swagger, and Donovan in a way, you know, guys here and there, but collectively, this young team, there are so many guys that play with that confidence and swagger, and they're so young.
Yeah, and Serginho Dest is a guy who I have a lot of questions about, because as we all know in our hearts, he is a world-class player and possesses an insane amount of skill and calmness on the ball. But in the game against Honduras and in the performance against Mexico, he didn't play very well. Mm-hmm. He was easily dispossessed. He looked confused about what to do when he had the ball. He didn't defend very well. He got beaten as a defender pretty easily, or more easily than you would think some guy that plays left back for Barcelona would against somebody from Honduras, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like he's playing anywhere near the equal in terms of quality that he does on a week-in and week-out basis.
But it's a different type of difficulty, I think, that some of these guys aren't used to that kind of game.
I always wonder if a guy like Serginho Dest, who comes out of Ajax and then goes and plays at Barcelona, shows up in the United States to play here and face off against a bunch of guys on Honduras, who play, some of those guys play in the USL or some Central American league,
yes.
And he goes, oh yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Mentally,
right. Well, some of it is this. I'm going to take it really quick here, just bear with me, to Sunday pub soccer, right? And take it to you. You play in a high-level league.
On a
very good team with good players around you, and you play against very good competition. You do okay in those games with the good teammates around you, even though you're playing high-level competition. When you are taken away from that and you're put in an environment where the soccer is not as good, even the team you're playing against is not as good as the team you're used to playing against, you probably don't perform as well.
Well, I'm a crummy soccer player anyway, but yes, I get your point. And I think that probably does apply
to
Dest.
It's choppier. It's not as organized both ways.
Yeah.
It's
the games are different, everything. Yeah. I'm sure it's difficult, and it's way easy to judge Dest on his performance when these changes occur to him, but I think it is more difficult than we probably realize. It's just the average guy watching.
Then you had the weather,
games.
Which wasn't a case here, but wait till he goes to Central America for qualifiers.
Yeah, and then the most, you know, so one of the weird conversations that not a lot of people have had is Stefan, the goalkeeper, gets hurt and has to come out of the game with a weird knee contusion. And man, I'm so glad that happened, because two things. One, he
That's
treats
not very nice.
And plays with the ball like he's in a PE class. Mm-hmm. Like he's way too
nonchalant
and kind of dwaddles on the ball like every and his passing is not very good,
which is odd because he plays at the
at Man
one of the
City
teams where you have to as a keeper be that way.
Yes,
yeah,
I found that very, very odd. Yeah. And so Horvath comes in and has a night that he will never forget. He's playing in front of his hometown. He's from the Denver area. His birthday's in a few days. He makes some amazing saves, and then he makes the penalty kick save at the end of the game that Sam opened the show with. And what a great story that was. And the way that the players reacted when the final whistle blew and he just kind of fell on the ground and not passed out, but he fell on the ground and all the players came running over to him. Which takes me back to this one thing, which is one of the oddities about the United States winning a tournament is that it puts the people who are very anti-Greg Berhalter, for probably valid reasons and concern that the United States deserves a more experienced coach, it puts them in the odd position of, one, hey, look, they won, and two, if you were to take one thing away from this tournament that I thought was of value was when Weston McKennie scored that tying goal. Where did he go? He ran. He didn't run. He sprinted 80 yards directly to Greg Berhalter and jumped in his arms. And I think there is a lot to be taken from the message that is being sent that these players like him as the manager and are willing to go to battle for him. And there's a lot of value in that mm-hmm. in a national team role.
Especially when McKinney is one of those, because he is one of the leaders. I think he should be captain, but he's one of the leaders in that room. For sure.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Do you agree with me? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, yeah. He definitely, I don't think there's any concern that he's lost the locker room or lost his players, though, right? I mean, that's not one of the issues.
No, but I think, I think there's been people that say, well, maybe the players don't think, very highly of him, or they don't hop on his bandwagon because he does a smaller resume or something like that.
No, I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's a complicated, he's a tough manager to play for, but playing for a tough manager is not bad. He's just a hard manager to play with in terms of tactics and mentality and how you have to always be adjusting to different things. I think that's where it becomes difficult to play for him, but I don't think they dislike him. They all want to succeed. They all believe in, he probably has them believing in what he wants to do.
Yes, but there is something to be taken away from Weston McKennie running to Berhalter mm-hmm. because Weston could have celebrated in any number of ways mm-hmm. in that moment. But to do that, I think, sends a pretty significant message. And speaking of Weston, we do need to take a couple of minutes to pat ourselves on the back because Dallas, you rock, and we'll talk about that next here on the Kick Around. All right, welcome back to today's Kick Around. I feel like we're in a good regular rhythm now that all the other sports are out of the way. We're not going to get bumped, and we're going to get a good run here, Andy. Mm-hmm.
Full on soccer summer
every Saturday, 2 p.m. here on the Ticket. Two solid hours of soccer talking and all that implies.
What?
Why'd you do that?
It's a soccer summer.
He's just a chaos agent in here.
Do you know he's foreseeing the issues with COVID and the Euros and Copa America and how it all is going to go? Huh?
I think Josh wants to lose 2 hours of hourly wage.
No, he'll have to work. He'll just have to run network instead.
I'm sure that's way more fun than listening to us prattle on about soccer.
It's so great.
A convincing statement there from the board op.
I was going to say something mean about Burnley, but I don't think that would hurt your feelings at this point.
Hey, stay tuned to The Dribble, by the way, for Copa America updates.
Yeah, yeah. There's some craziness going on with the Copa America stuff.
That's good advice.
All right. So we're talking about the U.S. men's national team and their big win over Mexico. And I want to pick up on a couple of things mm-hmm. That I took away from this.
Okay.
First off, I think one of the most underreported storylines in the game was the performance of Kellen Acosta. And
really, why do you say that?
Oh, I thought Kellen had a fantastic night overall. He made the mistake early that led to the sequence that opened the first goal for Mexico.
Yeah,
but I think considering the opposition, considering the fact that he was ironically asked to eventually go back and play left back, which was the old position that Klinsmann used to, everybody used to give Klinsmann crap for asking him to play. And just go back and think of Kellen's history, right? He was here in Dallas. He was an up-and-coming star. It was the year of Kellen. Remember that?
Yep.
It was going to be the year of Kellen, mm-hmm. and then suddenly he had
then
a lot of...
Then we get the little...
And then he had a lot of personal issues. Mm-hmm. He asked to be traded. He went to the black hole that mm-hmm. is Colorado, and we never saw him again.
Europe stopped calling.
Yes, Europe stopped calling, and now he has slowly worked his way back, and we are starting to see the promise, the delivery on the promise of Kellen Acosta that we all knew existed. Existed way back when.
Yeah, that's a very good point, is that when you look at it that way and seeing the roller coaster ride that has been his career recently, it was nice to see him plugged in,
mm-hmm.
Perform well. I don't know how outstanding he was, but he was solid. And maybe I just, I think a little bit as the other central midfielder in the four-man midfielder with Weston McKennie as the other, I think
McKinney I'm going to get to Weston in a second.
I think McKennie played such a good game and so much attention was played to his game that I think Kellen got lost a little bit in the shuffle.
And that's why I think it was an underreported story.
Yeah.
Look, if you don't know Kellen's story and if he wasn't from this area, I probably don't bring this up.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. It's because there's a soft spot in my heart for that guy.
He sat right here.
He's the Kick Around's own, and I wasn't pleased with him when he made the decision to be asked to be traded, and mm-hmm. I was, so I'm pleased with it. Now, I do have to take a minute mm-hmm. and say that I even tweeted this.
Good for you.
The fact that the person that I believe to be the best player on the national team of the United States is from my area, North Texas, fills me with a tremendous amount of pride.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think West, now he's not the star of the team, that's Christian Pulisic, but the best player on the U.S. men's national team is Weston McKennie. Period. The end.
Yeah, correct. And he was the player of the game for me as well.
And he's from here.
No lack of credit to Horvath for what he did and coming on as a sub. And he was the star. Maybe Horvath was the star of the game. McKennie was the player of the game. Now, what I said in that little Twitter, Twitter spaces.
Yeah. That was fun, by the
way. Yeah, it was. Yeah. That we had after the game. What I said was that don't be surprised when it's all said and done 10 years later that McKennie is really the star of this national team.
Yeah.
You know, no disrespect to Pulisic or Reyna, who will score a lot of goals, but the rock will be
the
McKennie.
Engine. The engine.
Yes.
If you haven't gone back and rewatched the game, you got to do that. Weston, the Tata Martino and Mexico could not figure out how to solve the Weston McKennie problem on set pieces. And watching him score, like, go back and just watch set pieces from that game and watch him absolutely destroy Mexico repeatedly. He could have scored. He was so good on those. He could have scored multiple goals. But the one that he actually scored to tie the game on is such a world-class piece of soccer on his part. He's from here. And that just is so cool.
So a couple more things to say about him. A, he's also a leader, a great leader. And we learned this from Juventus. Word out of Juventus is that, and he is young. How old is he? 22?
23 maybe? Yeah. Something like that?
That he instantly was one of the leaders when he arrived there. That he was a guy that, that even Ronaldo went up to and kind of like respected for what he was bringing to the team. Also, don't discount this. He is training on a daily basis with one of our generation's greatest players. And not only one of our generation's greatest players, but one of its hardest working and most physically fit.
Yeah.
And one that puts a lot of importance on nutrition. And that guy wants to win so bad. All his teammates fall in line with what he has to say. And so training with Ronaldo on a daily basis, that is also something that not everybody gets to have or do or experience. Just like if you train with Messi on a daily basis.
Yeah.
There's something to be said about that.
Yeah. And go back to the Honduran, the game against Honduras, and watch how McKennie handles himself against the Honduran teams who are being super CONCACAF-y. All that stuff that we hate, right? The time wasting, mm-hmm. the dark arts yep. stuff. Mm-hmm. He's so smart about how he handled himself in those situations. It just all of those little things that you can watch over the course of those two games,
including helping the stretcher crew.
Yes,
he taught him how to use the stretcher.
All of that. Now the other thing. So anyway,
one more thing because it's related to how he handled the against Mexico twice. Mexican players put their hands on his neck pushing
to try to get him to react and punch and stuff like that.
And he didn't. And he didn't laughed it off.
And he even made a comment. I don't know what the deal is, but they seem to like to grab me by my neck.
Yeah.
So very, very, very good. Yeah. And also of note, Reggie Cannon, by the way, did you watch the U.S. versus the friendly on Wednesday?
Yeah, I had it on.
So they dominated Costa Rica. They looked mm-hmm. fantastic against Costa Rica.
Coach got fired, by the way.
Reggie Cannon scored such a fantastic mm-hmm. goal, a very un-defender-like mm-hmm. goal. He cut back on his left, slotted it in. Such a good goal. My point in all of this is that there is Dallas, Fort Worth all over this national team, and we as a community should be enjoying that and reveling in that. Everybody should have a Weston McKennie national team shirt.
All right. What about Pulisic?
No.
Reyna.
They're not from here. I'm talking about guys from our town, Andy.
Right. Okay.
I know you're a foreigner, but it means something to me.
No, McKinney is quickly, it has become my favorite player on this national team.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
I said that after the game. I said, hands down, he was the best player.
U.S. 3, Mexico 2. We own the trophy, the 3D printed trophy of the Nations League. When we come back, it's America's favorite soccer segment known as The Dribble, next on The Kick Around.
Are we supposed to be impressed, Peter?
No.
Okay.
Who doesn't like the clapping part of this song? Why are you always such a buzzkill?
No, it's just you had the smug look on your face, like, nailed it.
Andy doesn't appreciate my art.
Nailed it.
All right, we're having so much fun today, which is ironic considering what was going down several hours ago. But this is the final segment of today's Kick Around. All right, just a couple of notes real quick. The European Championships continue. Now, tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, I'm going to give you a few games that you should watch this week. Do not miss. You know, it's funny. We got a note from a listener who had said that the show we did last week with Lars kind of previewing the tournament, he was like, man, I've never really thought about the Euros. And it turned out it's because he had only started watching soccer post the previous year. So he wasn't even aware of the European Championships, right?
Yeah.
And so I forget that there are people out there that, you know, don't, like, why would you not watch the European Championships?
Yes.
How could you not be aware of this? Anyway, so if you're one of those people new to it and you're just kind of casually watching it, here are three games you should watch this week. Tomorrow at 8 a.m., England-Croatia. That's a big deal. That is a rematch of the semifinal from the last World Cup. That is one you should watch. I have that written down as a 2-2 tie. Then Tuesday, France-Germany is a huge one. That is at 2 p.m. on Tuesday. I have France winning that game 2-1. And on Friday, the biggest game of the tournament without a question because of all the history around it, England versus Scotland at 2 p.m. That will be a battle at Wembley. All of it is really interesting, and I have that written down as a 2-2 tie.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you from the Scottish camp. Hey, real quick about the Champions League. Champions League.
Copa America.
No, the Euros.
Oh.
Who do you have winning it all, by the way?
So I have very boringly, like everybody else, picked France.
Yeah, it's hard to pick against them, right? Because of the depth they have.
Yeah, I have actually, and then the thing that I hate most about my bracket is I have them beating Germany. I have Germany going all the way. But the way that I look at this stuff is that as much as you want to be clever and come up with upsets, history tells you things, and if you're really picking, you tend to go with history. And once Germany gets to the bracket where I have them, the idea that they wouldn't beat some of these other teams just doesn't seem probable to me.
Yeah, and also to keep in mind with the Euros and Copa America as well is the COVID situation, because a COVID outbreak within a team can really like ruin things, right? And the rule in the Euros is that if you can field 13 players, including two goalkeepers, you must play your game.
Which is important now that we know this.
So now, word out of South America is that tomorrow's opening game, which was going to be one of the games I wanted to say watch just to get a feel for Copa America, Brazil-Venezuela, to be played tomorrow at 4, is in peril because Venezuela has a COVID outbreak. 12 players have tested positive on arrival in Brazil. So now it's up in the air whether they play the game or not. If they have a similar rule in Copa America that they do in Euros, it would mean that Venezuela can still field 14 players because it's a 26-man roster, and they would move forward with the game. But I don't know if the rules are the same or not. We're going to find out. So things are ready to a rough start.
Any other Copa America games
so
people should watch?
Yeah, I would say that the start of Copa America is going to be a little bit because teams, all they want to do is not lose because 4 out of the 5 advance. So they're kind of, I think they're going to be more focused on doing well later in the tournament. But Argentina-Chile is always a good rivalry game, obviously, because Chile has won 2 of the last 3, and they beat Argentina in both those finals. They just played a World Cup qualifier a week ago, 1-1 draw in Argentina. That game is on Monday at 4. But I would say the even better game to watch is Friday's game, the evening game on Friday at 7 p.m. This is on Fox Sports 1, Argentina-Uruguay. that is always a great game because Uruguay always gives Argentina fits. It's always a tight game. And I have Uruguay as the dark horse in this tournament, so maybe they can win this game. So those are the kind of the games to watch early on in Copa America.
So you have France winning the Europas like
me. I do, yeah.
And you have Brazil winning the Copas.
I know, the two boring picks. I know, yeah. But in this COVID craziness, I think ultimately teams with depth are the ones that will go far.
All right. We probably should have started this earlier, but let's do it. America's favorite soccer segment. It's the dribble. I just missed the music bed. Wonder if anybody listening to the show knows where this music bed comes from. We told everybody when the show started years ago, no, it doesn't come from Turkey.
Everything will come from Turkey now.
So anyway.
By the way, disclaimer, this is all Peter's idea.
What is? The dribble?
This.
No, this is Josh's
idea. Oh, okay, Josh. Okay, I was trying to say
this was Sam's idea.
Can you go back to the other thing, please, since I was actually encouraging people to call to action.
This goes on for the next 14 minutes, actually.
I'm going to come in there and sternly speak to you, sir. Can you go back to the dribble music? Thank you very much. I was wondering out loud if anybody listening to the show actually knows where this music bed without the turkey sound effects comes from. Its origin source. Do you remember? Don't say it out loud. Do you remember where this music bed comes from?
No, I don't.
Okay. If you know, tweet it at us, and maybe there'll be a prize for you.
Hey, you go ahead and start.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to, because we were talking about the U.S. national team game against Mexico. Do you know the final viewing numbers? I know that the Dallas market finished third among the Univision viewers.
Well,
right?
we don't know English viewership because it was on, because Paramount isn't stating all that.
Yeah, they don't give their numbers out. But it was almost 5 million. It was 4.2 average with a peak of 4.9 million on Univision. So over 5 million once you add the English language viewers. That is amazing. Now, you want to know another amazing thing is that
yes, Andy,
this
I do.
Month we have soccer on CBS, on ABC, on Fox. In a couple months, it starts on NBC with the Premier League. All four major networks have soccer, are into soccer.
It is
this month.
I know. It is going to be nuts. Now, the other thing that I wanted to talk about was a crazy story related to the Premier League, because coming back into the Premier League this season is Norwich. Our beloved Canaries are returning. And the crazy story about this that happened this week is that the Canaries were looking for a new shirt sponsor. And our very good friend P1, at Lone Star Canary, Mark, on Twitter, was bringing to my attention that the Canaries had signed a deal with an Asian betting company called BW3. Now, I didn't know this about Norwich. I was educated by Mark about this, is that this comes from a community that is very family-oriented, Norwich is. Like, the whole idea of family and all of this is a big deal to them. Mm-hmm. And they are all, you know, I guess the sense is it's a kind of a conservative fan base.
Yeah,
yeah, the fan base, you know, they're very family-oriented, and it's this kind of community like this. Okay. So they sign a shirt and announce a shirt deal with this company called BW3. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take long before some of the fan base uncover online some promotional videos on YouTube for BW3. And these videos, Andy, at least the one that I watched, was pretty much pornography minus any nudity.
So BK8.
Oh, I'm sorry.
BW3. BK8.
Oh, I got about. Oh, BK8. Thank you. I got my initials wrong. BK8 is the name of the company, and it's an Asian betting house betting company. BK8. Thank you. And so the video that they surfaced, the fan base surfaced, is this kind of cheesy 20-something Asian guy in these mirrored sunglasses in some patio backyard with these very attractive young Asian girls, each wearing a different jersey of a club team, but the jerseys have been modified and cut open to show cleavage, very revealing. And then, because they're speaking in some other language I don't understand, All I know is that on the table, there is a hot dog stuck on a stick pointing straight up in the air, and they're all taking turns eating the hot dog without their hands.
So let me guess. This didn't go down well in the wholesome enclave that is Norch.
Yes, and apparently there are other videos that go along with it. The company quickly tried to scrub their social media. Yeah. That didn't go very well because then other videos and social media posts started popping up. And before you knew it, the fan base won, and Norwich had to release a statement saying that the deal, which, by the way, was worth £5 million, which is a big amount of money for a club like Norwich.
Bring a lot of players.
Yes, was terminated, and now they will go back to Lotus as their sponsor. Which is a cooler logo, by the way.
Can this company sponsor the Kick Around?
Are you watching the video?
I'm taking this out. I'm very interested in potentially collaborating with this company. We need to contact them. I think they need to.
Well, you're on it, Sammy, right?
Yeah. Yes, okay. I am happy
here
to
at the
take
ticket,
point on this.
We have no qualms about this.
I'm certainly very motivated to make this sponsorship deal happen. Sorry, sales, I got this one.
So when the Canaries are in town or on your TV, you will not see that particular company promoted. Any way, shape, or form.
Hey, Peter.
Yeah,
as
Andy?
We say bye to the P1s today, towards the end of the show, I have a question for you. Because the national team, the U.S. men's national team, your national team, didn't qualify for the last World Cup, did you stop watching them?
No, Andy, I did not.
So I was listening to your fine performance on the... The Hardline.
They called and asked me to call in about the national team on Wednesday.
I think it was a fine performance.
Thank you.
Both Corby and Dan admitted to this, and I don't know if it was a bit, and I'm hoping this was a bit.
It's not. They were serious, I think.
But them saying this is why we are not yet quite a soccer nation. We're getting there. The 5 million that watched on TV shows that we're getting there. But we are not going to get there until this changes. They both admitted that because the national team didn't qualify for the last World Cup, they just weren't interested in the team anymore. They stopped following the national team.
Yeah, I was...
That is not right. Your national team is your national team. You never, never stop following your national team.
Yeah, I went into that segment knowing they were very short on time. It was during Sturm Center. And when Bob said that and then Corby agreed that he had done the same thing, I wanted to spin off into this, like, scolding.
Yes.
But I just didn't have time.
This is your
role. I know. But I had other things, more important things I wanted to talk about.
So I will scold them now, today.
And I didn't know how Bob and Corby would receive scolded by the soccer guy.
Yeah,
like,
it's all in fun. You know, it's all in fun because they do follow the sport. Bob especially. He and I are Liverpool brothers. But, you know, you can't lose the love for the national team. You got to follow them. They need your support.
Yeah, it was a weird deal. And by the way, that's the end of today's America's Favorite Soccer segment known as The Dribble.
Real quick,
I agree.
Denmark missed a PK.
Oh,
they didn't convert a PK.
Is that mental too, Andy?
Think about this, Peter.
I know. Man, what a weird day it's been. I'm so glad to report that Christian Eriksen is healthy and in a hospital. Well, he's in a hospital and he's alive. That's the best. That's probably the safest thing for me to say at this point. The game was finished. Denmark did lose 1-0 to Finland. Russia did end up losing to Belgium 3-0. I had predicted 3-1, by the way. I'm 2-2. In my predictions so far.
For wins, ties, and losses.
For wins, ties, and losses. I'm 2-2 in being correct or incorrect. Now, I've not gotten any scores accurate yet. Yes.
I would have gotten the Finland-Denmark game wrong.
And you would have gotten the Swiss-Wales game correct. You would have guessed 1-1?
Yeah, I would have guessed 1-1 there. Hmm. Yep.
Okay. How are you predicting England-Croatia tomorrow?
I think that is a 1-1 draw.
Oh, see, I have it 2-2. Yes. See, I have Croatia winning the group. I don't have... England winning the group.
Yeah, I have England winning the group, Croatia second.
I think England wants to finish second so they have a better path.
This is a good English team.
It is.
Have faith in your secondary national team.
Have you watched England play in a cup tournament? All right. Anyway.
Last World Cup. Top four.
It didn't really go as wanted. All right. Thanks, DJ. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Josh. Thanks, Mr. Turkey. And thank you, P1s. Go on. Get out. Get stuck in and win your 50s.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Plaza, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM Dallas-Fort Worth. KTCK FM Flower Mound.